According to a recent study from Northwestern University, failure is the essential prerequisite for success, adding that the faster you fail, the better your chances of success, and the more time between attempts, the more likely you are to fail again.
Some of the best advice that our team here has gotten is fail, but fail fast.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to Zan Rant.
It's so Zan.
It's the podcast where all we do is rant about mental health.
Hi guys, welcome back to Zan Rant.
Hello everybody.
Today, first off, you've got Maggie and Logan back on the pod.
After a long hiatus, it feels like.
Yes, it was. But I'm excited. We're continuing this series that we have about entrepreneurship, being in a startup. Our last episode, we talked about what it actually means to be an intrapreneur. And today we're going to talk about failure and the importance of failure, as well as the difference in perspective of being just a regular everyday individual who has their own goals or has a different career, works in a different day-to-day job, going to school, whatnot. Knowing what failure is in that case scenario versus being a part of a startup and what that really teaches you.
I think even between the two of us, because you're founder CEO, I'm marketing director, it's different because it's almost like your idea of failure might be on like a larger scale. Mm-hmm. Not that you don't see the smaller things, but like what I do every day or like what I've been doing for the past couple of weeks, like that's smaller scale failure that isn't gonna like destroy the company or something.
Right.
I was trying to think when we decided what the topic was gonna be today, like when, you know, me and Maggie were talking about it, we decided on failure. I don't ever think I've failed really greatly in my life, but I understand what failure is. I mean, everybody kind of understands what it is to a certain degree, but even though I hadn't experienced it on a large, like significant scale myself, I realized that, you know, not that I, obviously you don't want to fail, but if you do, it's fine. You know, none of our listeners know what me or Maggie look like. I mean, maybe if you go on like our social medias and stuff like that.
Well, that sounds so creepy.
Well, I'm leading up to something.
Okay.
So I have some tattoos on my arms, and my most recent one that I got, oh God, what year was it? I was probably summer going into my senior year of college. I got these three arrows on my right tricep that kind of cross over each other at these different points. And people always ask me, you know, why? What is the deal with that? You don't hunt, you don't own a bow or an arrow of any kind. What the heck is this? So I have to explain to them. I say, look, you go through life, you meet a lot of people, you know, a lot of people on different intimacy levels, whatever it is, but you more than likely know somebody who is stuck in, you know, you want to say stuck in a rut or whatever, but like stuck in this one point in their life where they're not happy. So I remember when I was trying to come up with what I wanted as a tattoo, because, you know, it's a kind of a big decision, as my mother will tell you. I was thinking, you know, I saw the tattoo design and then it, but everything that I have has meaning. You know, I have an angel on my one arm. I have my immediate family's birthdays on my one bicep. The other quote that I got when I was 18, my first one, it says, "By the strength within, I shall succeed," which is like obviously kind of like powerful and, you know, kind of motivates me.
Can you actually say that one more time?
Yeah. "By the strength within, I shall succeed." And that was my first one ever.
I love that.
Super basic. It's just on the inside of my arm. My brother took me to get it when our parents were away after I turned 18. So, but he already had
like a fun memory.
He already had so many tattoos at that point that he like paved the way. So it was fine. Yeah. But getting back to the bow and arrow, everything that I have in my body has meaning. So the meaning behind the bow and arrow, well, it's just the arrows, is that think about when you release an arrow with a bow, what happens? It just keeps going forward. Mm. Obviously it's going to run into something at some point, gravity, all that crap. But initially, and for, you know, an extended period of time, it's just going to keep going. Mm. So I put that on my body to kind of remind myself that, and it kind of to tie it into what we're talking about, if I fail, I don't want to get stuck in life, because I know people who are close to me who are stuck and they are miserable people. And I knew basically my whole life, I don't want to be like that. Like, you watch people, you grow up with these people, you know, whether it's in your family or friends, family, all this other whatever nonsense. You're like, oh, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be that. That looks awful. You don't say it out loud because that's rude. But in your mind, you're like, I don't want to do that. So I don't want to do that personally. I mean, I don't think anybody really does, but it happens. And you, it's when you fail and you allow yourself to be stuck, that's where the problem comes in. So I got this tattoo to remind myself, you know, just keep moving forward. Just keep going. In the quote from Finding Nemo, you know, just keep swimming. It's more powerful if you think about it that way.
It is. I think it's so interesting because – for me growing up, and I feel like this is a super common viewpoint, maybe not though, so I could be wrong, but for me, eventually I got to a point in my life, and I briefly talked about this, I think, in another episode. If not, we'll definitely expand it on another one. But I had a period in my life where I had a lot of trouble in school, and people thought I was dyslexic. I was in special education courses. And then getting to high school, my parents switched me out of public school, put me in private, and I had an opportunity to retake a test. I kind of paved that way for that opportunity because I remember feeling like I knew I was capable for more. I knew that I can be in higher classes. And again, there's nothing wrong with being in lower classes, and it doesn't make you lower as a person, you know, or less than.
Everybody's different.
Exactly. But for me, I just remember feeling really frustrated. I wanted to feel challenged. And so I went to the principal, who I did not know. I was in this new school, and I told him I wanted to retake a placement test, and he gave me permission to do so. And everybody in my family was shocked when I placed in the high scores. And that was amazing. That was a great moment for me in my life. And then I was put into honors classes and advanced placement immediately. But what that meant is I had to work 10, 20 times harder than everybody else because they were in that class because they, you know, were supposed to be in that class, but also because they knew how to solve the problems that they were talking in these classes. But because I had taken this placement test after years of not being really properly taught or not really understanding the material, et cetera, I literally had no idea what stage of these classes, you know, they were really in, what these advanced placement classes were. So I had to basically catch up. And I remember being so afraid to fail a class or fail a course or fail a test. And for me, failure at the time was failing a test or failing a class that I had just had the opportunity to be put in.
Right.
So there was a lot of pressure that I put on myself to kind of grow to the level that everybody else was. Because I felt I deserved to be there, and I took a test that told me I did. And so failure to me was failing a test. And that then eventually went into, you know, my driver's test. I didn't want to fail that. And so there was a lot of fear around it. If I don't fail this, if then this is going to happen. And there was always like this shame associated with failure. If I fail a test or if I fail a test, I'm full of shame for the fact that I felt I deserve to be here and I don't. If I fail my driver's test, then I'm somebody. And again, there's many people who struggle to take their driver's test for XYZ. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But for me, I was so type A personality by putting so much pressure on myself to be the best, to be perfect, to always get an A, always get an A plus. At this point in my life, I could not not get an A. I could not pass that test. And when I think of failure, there really was no other way to fail for me in my life besides, like, you know, fail, like I said, those tests, but maybe even when I got my first job, you know, fail at doing my job. And I carried that with me. But I feel like now I look at failure so different. And I feel like the way I saw failure when I was young is so common. It just feels like polar opposite than the failure that I know now. Because being in this company, being at the place that we are, we had our first version of our app went live January 20th, which is actually my birthday, January 20th to May 20th. And we utilized that as a pilot version. And we realized we wanted to utilize it as a pilot version really after our first month, because at the time we had maybe only one other investor who was involved with our journey, one other advisor. We had only three people who were fully focused and dedicated full-time team members, but we had so many volunteers. We had, 20 volunteers, and that was amazing. The volunteers helped so much, and that came from our experience in the nonprofit, knowing that volunteers could help us grow. But with those volunteers, it was constantly a game of catch-up to try to catch other people up to speed, to try to train them properly, to train the next person properly, et cetera. And so in our first pilot version, we had so many providers and so many users working together. And our pilot ended with 127 providers working with 92 users. But during that time, as a team, before we launched, we kept saying, oh, we just need to launch. We just need to launch. And we always felt like we weren't ready. We weren't ready. We weren't ready, because we were trying so hard to make it perfect. And when we went to market, we knew we had to do that because we had to jump. We had to jump so we could learn, but it was so scary.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, circle of fear that I mentioned in my life of don't fail the test, don't fail a driver's test, don't fail at your job. Those are things that were still very much real at that time for all of us. We don't want to fail at launching an app. This is our first time doing it. We don't want to fail at customer service. This is our first time doing it. We don't want to fail at offering services. This is our first time doing it. So with our pilot version, we learned so much. And then all of a sudden, trying to rush to get things fixed and done wasn't so scary anymore, because now we could be more realistic. Can we get something fixed by next week? Sure, we can try. And that's what we want. We want it done tomorrow. But we're going to add more time so that we don't say, oh, this will be done this date, and then it's not. And one of the biggest issues we had with our first version was we were working with a developer who we thought was really experienced. And it turned out that once we went live, he was experienced enough to get our app to the market, get us live and bring these providers on and manage that in our dashboard and our backend. But when we had crashes happening because there were different types of phones and we had delays on certain aspects of the technology, we would ask for a certain date and then find out on that date that it was supposed to be done, that now that he needed a couple extra days or he needed a couple extra days. And it was a really difficult time, because then we had to communicate that to providers, and we were relying on him to be honest and transparent about timeline, not expecting that he would have not allotted time for, you know, trial and error. And so we learned so much, and it made us stronger in so many ways just by realizing, okay, we don't want to hurt anybody's feeling by saying, hey, you're not the developer for us, but this is a growing company, a growing organization that's here to help people. And we can't help people if there's so many issues with the current version. So long story short, it just led us to look at failure differently. And it led us look at that as, well, we didn't completely fail. You know, we didn't fail and close the doors and our company never opened again. But we call that a failure because it didn't hit the ground running and continue to grow in a way that we were confident that we could keep serving people. And so we had to, unfortunately, let go our developer and build a new development team. We had to bring in a new designer. We had to do a tremendous amount of surveys with those providers and those users, and a tremendous amount of research on everything that we did a part of that pilot and use it as a case study. And now it feels like the greatest thing that could have happened to us, because now with Zant, we've made something that's so user-friendly, so provider-friendly, so advanced in its technology. We have tested it, 20 times?
Oh, it's a lot.
Different testing groups.
Yeah.
And we have made sure that everything is as buttoned up as it could be so that we can have a successful launch and not have to worry so much, because we know that the code is strong. we know that now we don't have three people just dedicated on this and 20 volunteers. We have a concentrated team that is fully dedicated on absolutely every aspect of customer service, of development, of business development, of partnerships and relationships, and so forth. Marketing, like yourself. So now it's funny because, like you mentioned in the beginning of this podcast, fail but fail fast. That is so critical. And now failure is exciting to an extent because we know that with failure, if we can fail but fail fast, then we're going to have a faster chance of becoming better, of becoming stronger, yeah, of just overall improving. So obviously you work with me in a startup. We have really just, I'm over the last, 6 months, we've just hit the ground running. Mm-hmm. We have had success after success after success, and it's feeling great. And we've also had weak moments, and we've had a little bit of, you know, failures every now and then, if you want to call them that. And we've gotten stronger and then had another success. So being in a startup, what has it been like for you? Have you seen a change in your viewpoint of fear, of failure, of, you know, understanding what quote unquote failure really is?
Yeah, it's been interesting. I guess I'll kind of start at the beginning when I started my internship, because that was, I was unproven, and I was, approaching graduation and, hoping that this would turn into a job opportunity, which it did, which is awesome. But definitely when I was an intern, it was different. I still have a fear of failure, but I take it a lot better now. Because I saw failing as an intern, it's like, yeah, one and done. Because, mm-hmm, I'm not ingrained in the team yet and things like that. Like, I'm not crucial to what we were doing, even though, I was important and our little small little marketing department was important. It was different because I knew I had one shot, mm-hmm, to make myself and show myself to be an asset. And, if you failed big time, because I mean, you didn't have the relationship we have now.
Oh, yeah.
So, sure. Like, I was still, this was my first and only internship. So I was, of course, scared, like, oh, the big boss lady is going to come down hard on me if I fail big time. But I never did, really. Our team faltered and maybe we didn't do things the best, but I didn't really fail. But coming into the position now, I was definitely fearful of failing, I guess you could call it, or not performing and delivering when, because certain things fall on my shoulders and Stephanie's shoulders, who works with me. So of course, just being introduced into that role of, you're paid now, there's certain expectations, different expectations, mm-hmm, really, than what you were as an intern. So I did fear failing then. I don't think I've failed. me and Stephanie, we work really hard, but I don't think I've talked about this yet on the pod because it's in its infancy. But what we've started doing and providing for our providers on the app, because there's so many logistics that come with, running your own practice and doing it on your own and managing your schedule and the billing, which of course the app takes care of, which is awesome. People really seem to like that. But also marketing yourself and getting yourself out there and getting more clients so that, you make an even better living than you were before. But of course it's hard and it takes up time. So what we've been doing is, and what Maggie, myself, and our team came up with is, we started marketing and running campaigns for the providers to kind of take that off their plate and take that weight off their shoulders so that they can focus on doing the awesome work that they do for the people who really need their services. Mm-hmm. So I do, every provider that gets onboarded, even though we're pre-launch, I shoot them an email and end up meeting with them, having a, short little Zoom call, and I talk to them about it. So it's basically sales. And there have been times where, I either, I'll make a sale, it's not immediate. People got to think it over. People are in different situations, which is totally fine. We totally respect that and understand we're human too. But, if you don't make a sale, then it's like, ah, damn, missed opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I guess that does feel a little bit like failure. I kind of take it on the chin. But there's other times where providers, I've only run into it, I could count them on my one hand, where I guess I did fail in delivering the message in a way that was received well. And we've talked about, I'm not going to drop names, obviously, but that feels like more of a failure because I know what I'm capable of and I do a good job. I do sell. People are really liking the boost. But in those moments, it's different because, and I take it personally, not in a way where I'm angry, but it's like, it's on me. Like, it's not on anybody else here. Like, that call was between me and that person. That was one-on-one, and I did not deliver. So coming back to that whole failure of delivery thing. And obviously, Maggie's going to tell me, I'm doing a great job. You're doing so great. But
sure.
I know. But at the same time, it's like, I don't want to be perceived in that way or not have a nice conversation with somebody, especially someone who's going to be on our app who, you know, I make sure to always tell them, like, and I speak for the whole team, that we're super grateful that they're doing what they're doing and choosing our platform to do it on to get the users that come onto our app, you know, the help that they actually need. So in that moment, I just feel like I didn't do them justice and us justice at the same time. So that's kind of something I'm getting better at dealing with. I don't think I fear it as in like I'm getting myself anxious about it before all these calls. Maybe at the beginning I was because I had no sales experience. But I kind of have, you know, the way I do things and my mojo, I guess you could call it. So I think I was anxious and fearful at first, but now I don't fear the failure. But when it happens, it's like, oh, damn.
But you know what is also super interesting about what you're doing is even though it's, I guess, technically speaking, sales because you're selling a package.
Yeah.
We're not making that package's profit. Right. In the company.
We're
using that package to run ads for the provider. It just happens to also really help what we're doing because it brings clients to the provider. Therefore, it brings clients to the app. Therefore, it helps the provider promote themselves because we're promoting the provider and they're a Zant provider. So we also build some sort of, you know, presence, brand presence. And you're not a salesperson, which is good. Because you're honest and you're you and you have, you know, integrity and you are just human with people. And we're always, especially with these marketing boosts, it's so wonderful to see the traction we've gotten, to see so many providers, you know, wanting to for us to run these ads. And it's exciting because, you know, it hits all those points I mentioned before. But we're not selling them to make a profit. We're literally selling packages to help the provider and grow our brand presence and bring users on the app. And I think what's super interesting is even we just had a provider we launched and 24 hours later, we already had a client signed up to work with that provider. So it's exciting and wonderful and heartwarming to see we really can provide these solutions, you know, for these amazing providers who they have services that, you know, people need. This particular provider I'm talking about, he has done corporate coaching for a long time, worked with CEOs like myself. I'm even considering talking to him, you know, and I think that's also funny because as, you know, a team, we see providers who we just have a need ourselves.
Yeah.
And as a group, we've even made our own little list of providers that we're looking to reach out to for help. But so when you mentioned the other provider experience you had, you felt like you failed them. Mm. And I think that's what's so different about failure now is that there is scary failure in business where you can quote unquote fail and close your doors. Mm-hmm. There's just never an option for us to do that because we are on a mission and we know that our mission is so important and we come from a nonprofit background. So even with $0 for years, we operated with $0. And so we aren't so business focused and we're also not just coming into this as a first time business operator where we have a mission and we're trying to make that mission possible. And so when I look at failure now, it's almost like you fail in ways where you're really not failing in the way you were taught to see failure. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like you're when people think of failure, there's a stop. There's a pause. Mm-hmm. There's a termination.
Yeah.
You know, but when we see failure, we know it's just an opportunity to become better. And when somebody like you just recently experienced lets you know how they felt, you then are able to take that and say, oh my gosh, I need to be better. Even if you're the best, there's always a way to be better. Yeah. And that also doesn't mean you're bad.
Yeah. I think what would definitely change my mindset, people's mindset, is, I guess, constant and compounded failure. Mm. Like, you know, we said fail, but fail fast. Mm-hmm. Okay. But like, let's say that happens. And I guess, you know, I'll not make it about me, but use myself as an example. If I went through 50 calls mm-hmm. and I didn't make a single sale, mm-hmm. then I would be like, the fear of failing would be on my mind all the time. Every single time I went into a call, I'd be like, oh. Not that I would say to myself, can't wait to fail, you know, screw me. Mm-hmm. It would be like a, you know, I haven't found success at all yet. Mm-hmm. So like, that implants in your mind. I mean, thankfully, pretty quickly, people saw the value in what we were offering. And then, you know, we got people very quickly to be a part of it and, you know, jump on with us and help us out in helping them at the same time. But I know if it was compounded, and kind of speaking in a general sense, if we failed and we got back up on our feet right away and then failed and got back up, it's hard to look past the failure to the learning part, but you have to do that. But I do think it would be hard mentally to deal with that and not get stuck. Like I said earlier, like, you would mm-hmm. just be like, I'm so tired of failing. Mm-hmm. I don't wanna, I like, if it were us, like you said, like, we don't really have an option because we're on a mission. But if it's hypothetically, if we were to just fail and fail and fail and fail and fail and not, you know, you can learn from it, but even if you implement those things that you learned, those lessons, and you just failed again, eventually you'd be like, oh my God, like, I'm just exhausted from failing. Like, why am I really even doing this? And you'd start questioning yourself. So thankfully that hasn't happened with us or with me even personally. But I remember, I'll give you a good example of it. And this is kind of a funny story, not very serious. So my mom is a teacher. I love her. She's a great mom. She will do anything for me. But growing up, she was very hard on me and my brother about school, very serious about it. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, creates a certain atmosphere in the house. And in when me and my brother were younger, I think I was 9, he was 12, we got the Xbox, like the Xbox 360 or whatever. But when I was in fifth grade, they would send you home with your grades for the week. It was homework, quizzes, tests, whatever it was that week that got mm-hmm. graded. They sent home in a folder. And you had to mark when you received it and counted up the pages how many there were. And then your parents would look at it, put however many pages were there at the end, and then they would sign it. Mm-hmm. And I remember we had a rule in my house where you can't play Xbox during the week, mm-hmm. like during the school week. So when it's Friday, I'm like, hell yeah, I'm going to go home. I'm going to play some Xbox, relax. You know, I got soccer practice or whatever, but like, I do like to play video games even to this day. And there was this span of probably a month, month and a half, where every Friday I'd come home with at least one C, and that was unacceptable in my house.
Yikes.
Yeah. I mean, my mom had high expectations, which kind of led me to be the student and academic, you know, life learner that I am now. So I'm thankful, but it sucked at the time. Mm. So a month, month and a half goes by. Every Friday, I look at it and I go, damn, like, that just sucks. And of course, it wasn't just, oh, she would see the C and then just be like, oh, well, you're not playing Xbox this weekend. I'd get yelled at.
Right.
Like,
right.
They would come down, her and my dad would come down pretty hard at me. And I remember the first time after that stretch where I didn't have a C, I was jumping around in the classroom. Everyone's like, what the hell's going on? And I'm like, I didn't get a C. I'm like freaking out because aww. Like, there was that success, but that compounded failure led to fear. Like, when my teacher was handing out the folders, I'd be sitting there like, fuck.
Yeah.
Like, I just, in my bones, I know I got a C, like, you know, whether it's homework or a quiz or a test, like, where, you know, like, oh, I didn't really do that great. And it was just that moment of success made me so happy. I was probably almost in tears, to be honest with you, just because I was so excited to have succeeded. Because at that point, it wasn't about the getting to play the video games. It was about not, I guess, disappointing my parents, because they were disappointed. They might have not said that to me, you know, the whole, I'm not angry or mad, I'm just disappointed, which sucks even more than, I'd rather you just be mad and scream at me and then, like, we just go about our day. But that success from the compounded and continual failure previously made it that much sweeter. But I could have very easily, I mean, during that month and a half, I was down in the dumps come Friday.
Right.
And everyone's all excited for the weekend. And I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty much screwed. My weekend's ruined. I have a C. Like, no one's going to be happy in my house. My life is going to be hell. And it was hard, but, you know, I was a good student overall. So it got better over time. But still, even my whole academic career, C's were never acceptable. So it's pretty funny because my other family members who aren't teachers and didn't come down hard on their kids about getting C's, because a C is like quote unquote average. Mm-hmm. But my mom was like, yeah, you're not average, so don't do that. And I was like, okay, I guess.
I can't even, I mean, I was getting C's and D's like all throughout school until high school. And then
I would not be here.
Once today. Once I ended up doing that placement test, I had to push myself and it started off with B's. And I remember my first B, and then it was A's, and then it was A plus. And, you know, I actually ended up finishing my high school career a year and a half early.
That's insane to me.
Yeah. Funny enough, and we can always expand another day, but I started really getting in the groove of working my butt off to accomplish certain goals to maintain this opportunity that I had of being in these advanced courses. And it got to, you know, a place for me in my life where I remember looking at the curriculum, because they would give you the curriculum in advance that you would have to take for your whole high school career. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing the last year and thinking, well, it was a gym class, a math class, and I was in a private school, so a theology class. I want to say there was also English in there. Yeah, there was English, because what I ended up doing is I remember seeing that and thinking, well, why would I come to school for a full day for four courses? Because then they would fill in those gaps of time, you know, with like study time or extracurriculars.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, why would I waste that year doing that when I could get started on college? And a very long story short, it took a lot of thinking and research. I had to look up the state guidelines. I was in a different state, going to school in a different state than I lived in. Mm-hmm. And so there were different state guidelines, and I would have to do certain things and take certain classes, but there was a community college across the street. So I was able to take an English and a math from the community college, which I would have been in an advanced class in high school, which would have been the same curriculum as the community college at that particular beginning level. Okay. And so I was able to take the math and the English there. I was able to do something really interesting, actually. I became a certified coach through the USAW, which was the United States weightlifting team. And I became a coach for that, went through the certification, and started training young people. I mean, I was training kids 15 to 20 in weightlifting. And in doing that, I was able to provide that certificate to the state to make up for my gym class. And with the theology, I had a theology teacher who really supported me and believed in me and, you know, kind of knew I was like this little underdog in the school, and would stay after school with me and help me complete an extra theology course. So I was taking two on top of each other. So my junior year was like crazy. I never stopped. After school, I had more school every single day, and then studies. And I was living off of caffeine. But what's interesting about your story, and, you know, for me, it was accomplishing those goals and pushing myself and challenging myself and knowing you can do this, even though it was scary, is when we did some research, especially talking about fear, the effects of chronic fear can actually be very severe. And that rhymes a little bit.
I feel like.
Yes. So there's actually four leading impacts of chronic fear. And I'm just going to give you a quick overview. I'm going to put this in the little bio area of our podcast if you'd like to do more research yourself as a listener. But one, physical health. Fear weakens our immune system and can cause cardiovascular damage, gastrointestinal problems such as ulcers and irritable bowel syndrome, and decreased fertility. So for women, you know, those three in itself is already a really big effect on your body. Memory is another big thing. Fear can impair formation of long-term memories and can actually cause damage to certain parts of the brain. This can also make it even more difficult to regulate fear. and can leave a person anxious most of the time. So what I'm hearing from that is this can be an underlying cause of anxiety, fear. I mean, it makes sense. You have anxiety of what that test was going to bring, right?
Yeah. You know, that's actually interesting. I don't mean to cut you off.
No, go for it.
But think about it when you have fear, right? Naturally, your body resorts back to that like primal part of us where that fight or flight kicks in.
Mm-hmm.
And in that point, obviously your brain is still functioning, you know, as an advanced, you know, human, you know, that we are today, but that fight or flight is still there.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're in that mindset, you're thinking, but you're not thinking critically and creating those memories. You're getting ready to fight or fly away. So it's like that your mind is going in a different pace and a different kind of mode than you're used to. So that kind of makes sense.
Yeah. And the last two are actually really interesting because, you know, fear has an impact on your brain processing and reactivity. Fear can interrupt processes in our brains that allow us to regulate emotions, read nonverbal cues, and other information presented to us. It can reflect before acting and act ethically. So it impacts those as well. This impacts our thinking and decision-making in negative ways, leaving us susceptible to intense emotions and impulsive reactions. All of these effects can leave us unable to act appropriately. Mm. And the fourth, which, you know, is really the big purpose of our podcast, is mental health. Fear and constant fear in this particular case can cause other consequences on long-term including fatigue, long-term fatigue, clinical depression, and PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. So long-term fear can cause mental illness, hurdles, issues, mental health issues along the way. And again, I'm going to put this particular resource in the bio here. It's a resource from the University of Minnesota. And it's a great study that really goes through the long-term impact of fear. But so fear has a lot of effects on us. If I could give anybody a piece of advice, it's so scary to look at failure. Mm. That's why we have so much fear around it, because it's scary.
Yeah.
What's going to happen? I would recommend, even though it seems weird, for a lack of a better word, meditate on what you're fearful about in your life. If you're fearful about something, I want you to ask yourself, what is making me fearful of whatever it is? And I want you to ask yourself, what is the worst case scenario and what is the best case scenario? I don't want anybody to think they need to constantly prepare for the worst. It's a very harsh frame of mind to constantly prepare for something bad to happen.
It's exhausting.
And it is exhausting. But every time I've been stuck on something or fearful of something, I've taken a second. This is a practice I learned from my therapist. I've taken a second to write down, what are the pros? What are the cons? What is the best case scenario? And what is the worst case scenario? And when I look at that worst case scenario, most of the time, I go, well, that's not really that bad. And it helps over time to do that practice. So when you do become fearful of something, instead of that fight or flight saying, be really afraid,
Yeah. You
start to realize, well, maybe it's not that bad. Let me focus on what could be good out of this and let me do this.
Yeah.
I'm here. Let's do it.
Don't let it own you. That's a big thing. People live in fear, and they let that dictate their entire lives, their actions, the way they think, the relationships they have with people. It's like, you're going to give something that much power over you?
Mm-hmm.
Think about what you've gone through so far. Or if you haven't gone through anything, you know, sit there and think, am I going to let this run my life? I'm in control. Like, yes, it's my brain, and yes, it's, you know, working my body and all that nonsense, but like, I'm me. I'm stronger. I said this to one of our coworkers once. You have a strength inside of you that you're not giving yourself credit for. And I think that's it. People who are fearful on a very regular basis, I think, you know, if you're listening to this, or if they hear it from someone else, it's like, oh, well, okay. And think on that. like actually let it resonate with you. Don't just say, oh no, you're wrong. Or don't just say, oh yeah, you're right. And just yes, that person to death and just be like, okay, get out of my face. And then go back to living in fear. Give yourself some credit. You've gotten this far. So why are you going to let something like this derail you? Don't let it own you.
So to our listeners, fail, but fail fast. And when you fail fast, get up and keep moving forward. Remember, write those pros and cons. Look at that worst case scenario, but don't let it consume you. Keep going. Thanks so much for listening, guys, to Zant Rant with your hosts, Maggie
and Logan. Go to www.zant.app, that's ZANT.app, to find out more about our products and services.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.